Good morning, everyone. This is Carolyn Yeager's Revisionist Report on Tuesday, July 19th. Something happened to my music, but that's all right. I'm here. Yesterday, I was telling you about my visit to the Auschwitz Memorial Museum in Poland on the grounds of the former concentration lager. That's not very good German, but which means concentration camp. I was not able to finish it, so I'm going to spend another day on the Auschwitz story and wait until tomorrow to go into the eugenics topic that I have planned. I will take calls at 1-800-313-9443 concerning Auschwitz. Now, in my hurry to finish yesterday, I left out a few things. I never did get to Birkenau, which I'm going to cover this morning. Now, in the same museum building, with the enlarged photographs and documents that I was telling you about, we were taken into a room with prisoner artwork on the walls. This amounted to drawings of atrocities being carried out by the SS. Now, as I recall, they were mostly done by only two artists, and they were all labeled 1945 or after 1945. And my conclusion was that these were done as part of the propaganda that was already, underway against the Germans by the Jews. They were Jewish artists. And there are folios of this by particular artists that are kind of well known. One example of this is a woman named Zofia Rosenstrau, who has an album called Death Camp Auschwitz, in which she does all of her drawings. And this is really, not typical of the kind of art that should be associated with Auschwitz, because there actually was a prisoner art museum. And that included art classes. They called it the art museum, but they had art classes there. And then they exhibited the art. And it was in the large building right inside the entrance to the Auschwitz I main camp. This is a building that now houses the museum offices and archives. It's not open to the public at all. They don't mention it on the tour. You just walk by, If you ask, I guess they'll tell you, well, that's the offices. And there's no sign there or anything. But during the operation of the camp, it was a library on the first floor. There was a library on all the large camps, a large library, lending library for the prisoners to come and check out books or sit there and read books. But, you could check out the books. You must have been able to, because they definitely had these libraries, and there were quite a lot of books in it. And then they gave over two rooms for these art classes and for exhibit space. The art museum started out in another building further back, and then later, pretty early on, it was moved to this large building and given an extra room. And that's where the person that headed it was a Polish inmate who was a very good artist himself, and he supervised it. I think that's all he did. And he, supervised the classes and so on. And they did sculpture there and all kinds of art. And all this art is today, can be seen, at least what they have of it, in an art museum in the town of Auschwitz, which in Polish is, I can't pronounce Polish, so it's something like Auschwitz. I won't try anymore, but you know what I mean. That's what it's named today. And in that town, they have this art museum there, and they have over 12,000. Let's see, I've got it in my book. 1,470 pieces of art that were done at the Auschwitz-Birkenau camp, and it exhibits them. And only a very few of these depict violence or cruelty. I have some examples in my book, but we've seen examples, and they're just normal kind of artwork that's done. So very different from the stuff that they're trying to tell us now the people from there were doing as art. Okay, we'll continue this when we get back.
Introducing the new Go Berkey Kit, the first of its kind portable water purification system for those on the go. The new Go Berkey system has an amazing output of about a gallon an hour. Each Go Berkey kit includes a 1-quart high-quality stainless steel system, complete with a black Berkey purification element, a generic sports bottle, and a nylon carrying case. The whole kit weighs a mere 2.25 pounds. With an expected element life of around 3,000 gallons, you can refill the Go Berkey system up to an incredible 12,000 times before needing to replace the element. The new Go Berkey kit is perfect for backpacking, hiking, emergency packs, bug out bags, international travel, car emergency kits, or for your desk at home or at work. Get your Go Berkey kit today for only $139 by calling 800-724-2719. That's 800-724-2719. Go to republicbroadcasting.org. The online store, it's a featured product.
Have you heard? Proactiv is better than ever. Stay tuned for a million bottle giveaway. Do you have troubled skin, acne? Well, we have great news. With Proactiv, your acne can heal, and you can prevent new breakouts from happening. Be one of the first to try it by giving us a call at 1-800-489-0192. Because we're going to let a million people try Proactiv risk-free and also receive our legendary refining mask and green tea moisturizer free if you call right now. You heard it. Be one of the first to try Better Than Ever Proactiv Solution. You'll receive a 60-day risk-free trial, plus a free refining mask and green tea moisturizer. Call 1-800-489-0192. This is our best radio offer. Get your risk-free 60-day trial of Proactiv, plus two free extras. Go to GetProactive.com or call 1-800-489-0192. That's 1-800-489-0192.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Carolyn Yeager, and this is the Revisionist Report. I'm talking to you. I'm finishing up today my story that I started yesterday that I call My Visit to Auschwitz. And I was telling you about this large building inside the entrance, which the tour guides on the tour or anywhere, you know, on any tour, they ignore. They don't tell you about that. They don't tell you the history of it. And I'm sure that there's no signs there, nothing identifying it. So you wouldn't find out on your own unless you research the history of the camp and what was going on there. Now, I said that there was the library and the art museum and on the first floor. And then this is the building that on the upper floor, there was the brothel. And this was the brothel for the inmates. And it was the women who worked there were paid by the SS, and they were mostly Polish women who came. They were prostitutes, you know, people who were women who were prostitutes and wanted to be prostitutes, and they served that purpose there. Mostly they were Polish women because this was in Poland, but there were some other women there too, you know, they weren't all Polish, but they weren't Jewish. I know that. They were, I don't think they were Jewish. I don't know. Actually, there were some, I've read that there were some German women there, but that's not the point of my talk today, to talk about that. I'm trying to talk about my tour. And so, and then in the basement of this building, the orchestra practiced and kept their instruments in the basement. And yes, there was a very large orchestra at Auschwitz. It had up to 100 members, but they didn't all play at the same time. They played every day. at a certain spot next to the kitchen building, which is also right at the entrance. As the prisoners, I understand, marched out to work, and when they came back, they'd play music to march music and so on, and lift their spirits and say, okay, now we're going off to work. There was really, you know, as Tom said yesterday, it was a work-labor camp, and they were interested in keeping up the morale and the energy and the goodwill, actually, even, of the inmates so that they would work, you know, and this was the whole purpose of the place. Now, they also had other musical groups, you know, that inmates formed on their own. And then, of course, this main orchestra, the conductor was also a Polish inmate named Franz Nierczlo. But now at Birkenau, they formed a number of musical groups. They had a women's orchestra. There was a men's orchestra. And the says here in my book, I've got violinist Sizmon Lax was conductor of the Birkenau Men's Camp Orchestra. And they had children's choral groups, and they had men's choral groups, and they had theater groups. They put on plays and shows and stuff, which they did on their own, and they got whatever help they could get in the, you know, costumes and things they needed. So there was a lot going on. There were also a lot of discussion groups and what you'd call school classes going on that the inmates especially at Birkenau, but that the inmates organized themselves, as because there were, you know, educated people there. And so they would decide on, they could teach this, and people wanted to come and learn, and they gave, you know, had lectures and had discussions. And they even had discussions about political things. They discussed Zionism, socialism, Czech nationalism. This was all done by the prisoners in their, or the inmates in their spare time, which they did have. All right. So now, with the orchestra, now I want to say that, you know, when, I managed to talk while we were still in the Auschwitz main camp with the bus tour leader. See, we had the tour guide that met us at the camp, but the guy who took us on the bus, he was also there the whole time. And they were both Polish, the woman and the man, and he was youngish, nice looking man, and we had passed those infirmaries that I told you about yesterday that they didn't say anything about, and I went to him. You know, I just decided I was going to be vocal while I was there. I wasn't going to act like a dope and not open my mouth, and if I had something to say, I was going to question and, you know, press them for information. And so I said, you know, nobody mentioned these infirmaries. And then there was also a hospital. So you're not giving a clear picture here of what was going on. He said, oh, that SS hospital, just for the SS. I said, well, I understand it wasn't just for the SS. It was for the SS, but also inmates went there if need be and so on. And he just dismissed me like nothing, like I was stupid. You know, he was very arrogant about it, and he wouldn't even talk to me about it anymore. So that was just SS. So then that's when, from there, you know, as I said, we were taken to the gas chamber, and I didn't tell you a part of that because I was in a hurry to get through it. When we got there, we were first taken to, where you see where the big sign is. I guess it's by the entrance. It was hard to see. You didn't really, it was such a nondescript thing. All I remember is that we were standing there and looking at a big sign. And on to the right of that was an empty area, space. Inside there, you know, right in the center was this gallows. And this is the gallows that they constructed to hang Rudolf Höss, who was the commandant of Auschwitz most of the time. And that's where they did that. And so they keep that there to show you, this is where we hung this war criminal. And this big sign talked about it showed the changes that had been made to the gas chamber building. and which isn't, was not a gas chamber, ladies and gentlemen. It was a crematorium with a morgue, but, you know, they call it the gas chamber. And it you know, has, I've seen this diagram in books too. It shows that they changed some of the shape of the rooms, the size of the rooms, the smaller rooms. They changed an entrance going in. They added in, and they added a door. They did a few things. And then they, you know, for many, many years, they covered that up. They did not admit that they had made, that they insisted this building was the original building that the Germans used, as, just as it was when they had it. And, but the, once again, the revisionists finally proved enough and made, you know, got the knowledge out enough that they finally had to, admit otherwise. And you, and some of you may be familiar with that very well-known video that David Cole made, in which he got the head of Auschwitz history department to admit to some things. That video is what really turned me around, and it did that for many people. So I was talking about this, how they made these changes. Yeah, well, they not only made some changes inside, but they actually added this huge tall chimney that's there now, which was never there, and they changed the roof. It was a sloping roof, and they turned it into a flat roof. This is the Soviets. In 1947, around 1947, they did all this work. They knew during 46 they were doing the trials. They were, you know, putting out all their propaganda and so on. And then in 1947, they got busy doing this reconstruction. And by changing the roof, they made it possible to say that, well, now this building has a flat roof, and the SS got up there and they put some holes in the roof, and they said, now, they, you know, they poured the Zyklon B down these holes and into this morgue, which now they call a gas chamber, and that, you know, they put all these people in there, and 1,000 at a time or more, and this is how they did all this. Well, previous when the Germans had the camp, it didn't have a flat roof. It didn't have those holes. It didn't have that big chimney. It had an ordinary type chimney coming up, you know, through the roof that was for the crematory ovens, because it was a cremation building. And then this chimney outside has never been connected to anything inside, and that's shown. It's totally separate from the building. The whole thing, you know, but they got away with that for a long time, but finally they had to admit it. So now they try to downplay it. And so she, you know, she told us that, and I said, well, look at all those changes. I was trying to get the people in the group to notice this. And she said, oh, it didn't make any difference. You know, this doesn't make any, but they didn't talk about the roof. See, they only show about, the changes in the shape of the rooms inside. Well, all right, so there was that. Then we had the experience of just having me being rushed through that building, as I described yesterday. And then we went on the bus to Birkenau. Now, we parked outside the famous gate, and I thought, wow, I got to get a picture of that, but I wanted to get the right one, and we were, you know, rushing inside there. So I waited, and when you go inside, you're confronted with a row of wooden barracks. And then they take you, she took us into two of them that are especially set up there for the tourists to look at. And one is a sleeping block, and the other is a latrine building. And, of course, they're completely bare and denuded of everything. They're just old wood inside. And when you go in the sleeping block, it's just rows, a long row of these bunk beds on either side, but of course no mattresses or no bedding, no nothing in there, and just wood. So it looks very dreary and horrible. And at the entrance, there's a stove, a porcelain covered stove, which was provided the heating for the entire barracks. And I'll explain that when we come back for our next segment. And we have a caller, and I will take the caller. I hope he's still waiting.
Are you serious about maintaining or improving your health? If you are, you need Terravim. Terravim offers a full line of vitamins, minerals, and herbs for people serious about enjoying a healthy lifestyle. Our product lines include Alamax, Magnesen, Silver 100, Natura Health Products, Gala Herbs, and Terravim's private label, and undergo rigorous clinical studies by leading researchers and contain physician-grade research-based therapeutic doses of nutrients. All of our vitamin, mineral, and herb products are manufactured under current good manufacturing practices. This is in an FDA-registered production facility, and we guarantee that the ingredients in the supplements are exactly what's on the label. We also provide free consultation for all our products along with general wellness information. All orders over $45 ship free, and all orders received by 3 p.m. ship the same day. When shopping online, enter the coupon code RBN for a 10% discount. To order now, call 1-866-647-4372. That's 1-866-647-4372 or visit terravim.com.
Are skyrocketing prescription costs draining your budget? If you don't have insurance or are taking medication not covered by insurance, the Powerhouse Savings Card can lower your prescription costs by up to 50%. Now you and your family can save 20 to 50% on all prescriptions. It's accepted by most pharmacies and mail-order pharmacies nationwide. No prescription card is easier to use. Just show your card and save 20 to 50% right on the spot. There are no monthly fees. Just a one-time processing fee of only $4.95 for you and your immediate family. Stop paying full price for prescriptions. Stop going without the medication you need because it costs too much. Now your family can get the prescriptions they need at a cost you can afford. Call 1-800-963-0232 now and start saving money with the Powerhouse Savings Card. Call 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232.
The Berkeylite's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkeylite, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkeylite is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkeylite, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Carolyn, and I'm talking about my visit to Auschwitz. And now we're at Birkenau, and I have a caller. I'm going to take your call, Michael, in just a minute after I finish just talking about these two barracks at Birkenau that were shown. And I was telling you about the porcelain stove. Okay, it's porcelain covered. That was typical German-style stoves in that time. And all the stoves in the Auschwitz, one brick barracks were porcelain-covered stoves, and they had the same thing here in Birkenau. And the stove worked, heated the whole barracks by having these pipes that came out from it, and then these pipes ran down the entire length of the barracks in the middle, and the bunk beds were on either side. And it had a platform-type thing covering built over it, so that it was handy because the inmates there would sometimes heat their food on it. I mean, it got that warm, that hot. And sometimes they sat on it for warmth if they wanted to get especially warm, or if it, you know, was a particularly cold night or something. So they did work. They did heat, and they did have the fuel. But it could be that in the last months there was no fuel. That's very, very possible. In fact, likely. But this tour guide of mine, she was really stressed to us that the temperature inside the barracks was always the same as the temperature outside, that, you know, it was hot in the summer, cold in the winter, blah, blah. But, you know, that's just simply not true. And I got so disgusted listening to that. Then we went into the latrine. Of course, it was in bad shape. You know, there are a couple of large round sinks to one side at the front, and they looked pretty useful because they were large. People could stand around them, and the water was coming out from these various spouts, and you could just wash, you know, your hands, wash your face, wash your upper body, or wash whatever you wanted to wash, clothing or something. I don't know what you're allowed to wash in there, but they were quite useful. And then there was this long row of cement, like a cement platform with round holes in it. And of course, it looks very unpleasant, and it's old, and it's broken down. And the whole barracks, again, has nothing, just wood, you know, wall, nothing in it. So it looks repulsive, no question. But there it was. It was better than some things that were done for the latrine facilities that the German people got in the camps that they were put in after the war. Didn't even have this. They were just trenches dug outside with a stick or something put across that you tried to sit on and balance yourself. Sometimes people fell in. So anyway, that's those two. That's what they showed us there. And I will continue with that after I take Michael's call. Hi, Michael.
Good afternoon, Carolyn. I have a question for you.
All right.
I listen to your show, and I listen to your debates on the other show you're on before you got your own show. And there's some subject that no one's covered, and maybe it's just me. Back in the mid-90s, they were doing, I was watching the German TV, Deutsche Welle TV, and they do English and German translations, you know, for both audiences. And they rebroadcast mm-hmm. in the United States, and I like watching because I get more news about the United States than watching our own local propaganda. Anyway, they talked about the concentration camps and all these victims that had their lost their homes or burned or destroyed, and they had nowhere to go after the war. And they talked about how they even lived at these camps, the same ones they were supposed to concentration camps, up until the mid-60s. Is this
yes,
true?
Yes, that's true.
And if it was such a bad place and so depressing, everyone getting killed there, like they claim it is, how come it's never talked about? I mean, I don't never heard you mention it or anybody else.
Well, I probably just never got to that. There's so much to talk about with this. But I know, for example, at Dachau, it's well known that Dachau was used, right after the war ended, they put all the Germans that they considered needed to go on trial and be tried for war crimes of one kind or another, or if they were associated with the Nazi party in any way or whatever. And they put all them in the Dachau barracks. And then they kept them there for a couple of years while they were having these trials and they were, you know, interrogating them and finding out who was who and, you know, what kind of charges they could bring up against them. A lot of them were eventually released altogether because they didn't have any charges. But then after that, after those trials were over and the U.S. Army was not interested in it anymore, then Dachau was taken over, it's in Bavaria, and the Bavarian government lots and lots of the refugees were coming to, German refugees were coming to Bavaria for some reason, which I'm not sure of right at the moment. But they had to find a place for these people. And some fortunate people from, or maybe they were Germans from Czech, you know, the Czech area. They came and they actually lived there, moved in, and they lived there for a long time, and they were happy to have it to live in.
Well, the case they were making was the former inmates stayed in the same prisons they were supposedly interned in, because they had nowhere else to go. I mean, if it's such a depressing place, why would they stay if that was the case? That's the point I was making with what they were making.
The former inmates of what camp stayed in the camp? What,
you know what? I remember seeing it back in the mid-90s, and it was talking about Germany and how people still lived in the same camps clean up into the mid-60s.
Who they were. Are you sure that they were former inmates?
This is what,
or that
I remember the news broadcast.
Maybe that wasn't made clear.
And maybe it's me just not remembering clear.
Yeah. Well, look into that. And call back another time and let me know what you found out. If you can learn anything about it. All right, we have to go for our break. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Estrogen dominance, a brand new 20th century disease, a phrase coined by Dr. John R. Lee 35 years ago. Dr. Lee proved that all the estrogen that is coming from food and water is having a devastating effect on our health. The rapid rise in breast cancer, uterine cancer, prostate cancer, weight gain, osteoporosis, feminizing of our boys and early puberty of our girls, and also the destruction of natural killer cell function. Natural killer cells are our only protection from cancer and viral infection. Dr. Lee found that using natural progesterone, about 20 milligrams per day, would not only reverse osteoporosis, but would greatly reduce the cancer issues, as well as dozens of other health challenges we face today. Visit our website, healthlinkamerica.com, to order the DVD on hormone imbalance. Learn how hormone imbalance destroys the immune system and get started on natural progesterone and Cyto-S. It will not only change your life, it may in fact save your life. Once again, that website is healthlinkamerica.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
When I had a heart attack at 42, I was not sure what the future held. But a year later, the doctors could find nothing wrong with me and took me off all my medication. What did I do? I took a herbal mixture of garlic, cayenne, and a few other herbs mixed in liquid form. I now call this Extendovite. I would have never believed that a few simple herbs could actually change my life like they did. Now it's your turn to see what the powers of garlic and cayenne can do for you. For only $69.95 plus shipping and handling for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid, you too can begin on your path to better health. For more information, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Warning for all Gulf Coast disaster survivors. Be aware that dangerous gases are in the air you breathe. Benzene, hydrogen sulfide, methylene chloride, and Corexit 9500. Keep your body clean with microplant powder. For all Gulf Coast residents and all who want to be healthy, HempUSA.org brings you a new formulation of microplant powder with lactobacillus acidophilus, rebuilding your immune system while detoxing the rest of your body, pulling out positive toxins, heavy metals, viruses, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Microplant powder will help eliminate these dangerous chemicals from the body used in the Gulf cleanup. At HempUSA.org, we want you to try our number one selling detox product, Microplant Powder. Call and order at 1-908-691-2608. 1-908-691-2608. Or visit us at HempUSA.org today.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We had Michael on the phone. Is Michael still there, or did he leave? Okay, Michael is. That was a nice call for Michael, though. And I will say that these camps were used for the Americans used our the German camps to put Germans in, and the Russians in their zone put Germans into these camps. And they were really bad when the Russians had them, and then eventually most of them were torn down, but some remained. And like I said at Dachau, people lived in them because housing, you could either live outdoors, you know, in the open, or you could live in one of these. That was better than that. So, and you know, if you could make them homey, which they did, they made them as homey as they could, and they weren't that bad. They did not look like they are show them today, all bare and empty and so on, when they were in use by the Germans. And if you go to Dachau, they show you their sample, example of a barracks. And it's, they say this is just the way it was, under the Germans. And it's very nice looking. And they even have a dressing room area with lockers and everything next to the bunk sleeping area, and it's all newer looking, and it's looks very nice actually. So at Auschwitz they make it especially horrible, and at some other camps they do too. They just, you know, that's the impression they want to get across. Okay, I want to move along here. So I got fed up listening to this tour guide, and I walked outside and I said, I'm not going to follow along with her. I want to look around and find some, you know, look, see what I want to see here on my own. But it was, you know, beyond that, what they had there close to the entrance is just this big emptiness going on back there, you know, everywhere from there. And I thought, well, how, you know, what are we going to do? So finally they came. I was wandering around, and my companion had decided that he wasn't going to walk around Birkenau. He was just going to sit down there by the some area by the entrance that was shady, and he was over there looking at some things. So I thought, so then they came out, and I said to the tour guide, I said, I want to go to the, because she had said that we weren't going to go to the, to see the crematoriums in Birkenau. These were the ones that were supposedly did all the, you know, murdered all the millions of Jews and others. So, and they're destroyed, but they're there. And I had pictures. I had, you know, I was I had diagrams. I had everything with me. I wanted to study these. And she said, oh, we're not going there because, and she told the whole group, because they're being renovated. You know, actually they're under some preservation process, because she said they're deteriorating so badly that they won't be there pretty soon. So they're trying some kind of preservation something to protect them from the elements. And I said, well, I want to go see them. I didn't come here to not see those. And I said, can I go there by myself? And she said, yes. And, you know, because I said, how much longer are you going to be here? She said, well, we're going to spend some time here. I said, do I have time to go? She said, yeah. She said, but you won't see anything there. There's nothing there to see. Well, so I had, everybody's, you know, people are walking down this. So I head off down this long road, and it turns out to be pretty long, and the day had become warm, and, you know, but I'm trudging along there thinking, I wonder how, you know, how much longer they're going to stay there, because I thought I had to stick with them because my friend was back there too. And, but I get to it. And there it is. There's a great big sign there describing the preservation process and the funding. And, of course, it talks about Ron Lauder, or else he signed it. But anyway, it's under his auspices and some Jewish Auschwitz Memorial Committee or something that he was in charge of. No, Ron Lauder is the son of Estée Lauder, the cosmetics queen, and they have a huge fortune. And he's very, very active in Jewish and Zionist causes and promoting the Holocaust. And so, you know, I read the sign, and they have this, I was at Crematorium 2, the most famous one, the one that was most in use, did the most damage, and supposedly, and it was roped all the way around, just like the gas chamber in Auschwitz 1. And so you couldn't get, because they were working on it, so it was too dangerous. It probably will always be roped off now. And you couldn't get up to it unless, and I looked around, I thought maybe I could just do it anyway, but I decided not to get in trouble. So I had my camera, and I was looking to get some good pictures. I was trying to look for those holes in the roof, that the collapsed roof that they had jammed these holes into later, that the revisionists had talked about. But I couldn't tell which one was, but I took a picture of one I thought was. And I looked over that real good, and I thought, well, I probably, you know, I'd like to go and look around. I'd like to go over and look at Crema 3, which was a ways away, because, you know, it was opposite. It was across the, it looked pretty far away, but, you know, it's not that I couldn't see it. It was this another just pile of rubble. And then there was the big memorial monument there, and all those plaques were there. But I wasn't too, I went and walked up there, and I looked at the first plaque in some language, and I could see the monument off in the distance, but I'm not interested in that. So then I decided, you know, I just better get back. I really can't stay here any longer. And I'm walking back this long, long road, and I, you know, I can see the entrance, but it's a ways away. Finally, I get closer, and I'm starting to feel nervous, and then I see my I see my companion standing there by himself looking up the road. And there's nobody else hardly around, and I'm thinking, uh-oh. You know, I just had this feeling. Well, yeah, the tour group couldn't wait for me. They took off, and when I got there, he was a little bit put out, but not too bad. And he said, I said, well, why couldn't they wait? He said, well, they couldn't, you know. But they said there was another bus from the same company leaving, you know, 10 or 15 minutes later or something. and we could get on that one. But that one left too. I said, how could I have been gone so long? It didn't seem, you know, I had to rush myself. And he says, well, they're all gone. I said, well, what are we going to do now? And he said, well, they said there was a shuttle bus. That's when we learned about the shuttle bus. I said, oh. I said, well, fine. And then, you know, we go out into the parking lot, and there's this little shuttle bus sitting there waiting. It runs every 20 minutes, and it was nice and cool in there. And we get seats, and I said, see, this is what we should have done to begin with. I mean, you know, look, they have everything. He admitted that I was right there. And then I said, well, I asked the driver or somebody how long before they were going to take off, and it was, you know, it was five minutes or so. So I said, I'm going to run out and get a picture of this entrance. So I, my companion says, no, no, don't go. I said, oh, I'll be right back. And I ran out of the bus, and I found a good, you know, good view of that famous entrance, which I hadn't gotten a picture of, you know, from the outside. And I took that and came back in the bus, and we still had to wait a little while before it took off. So it was fine. And we get back to Auschwitz I, and he just wants to go back to Krakow. But I said, we found out where the city bus came, and there was a nice benches there across the street from where the bus came, and under the shady trees and all, very pleasant. So we sat down there to wait, and it was quite a wait for the bus. And I said, you know, I just have to go back to the camp and find the swimming pool and find quite a few things that I want to look at. He said, okay. He said, take your time. I'm quite comfortable now. I don't care how long I have to sit here. You go and do what you want to do. So I went off, and that's when I looked at some of the other things that I wasn't shown on the tour. And I'm so glad I did that. And when I got back, he was sitting there with another couple who had sat down. And this was a couple from England. And they were chatting. And this couple had come for the weekend or something like that, just to see Auschwitz. You know, they flew in, and the wife turned out to be Polish, who had emigrated to England, and they had married, but she was originally Polish, although she spoke like an English woman. And so when I got there, you know, I think it was me that asked, well, what did they think of the of Auschwitz? And the man said, oh, very impressive. Oh, you know, something like that. And he asked what I thought. And me being the kind of person I am, I said, well, I'm disappointed. I said, I was surprised at the vehement anti-Germanness that's going on here. And he kind of took umbrage. He said, well, what would you expect? He said, you know, look what the Germans did to the Poles. Look what they did. They came in and went, what would you expect them to feel? And I says, well, you know, it's like it was yesterday. I mean, it was quite a long time ago. Where's the reconciliation? And then, you know, he got on. And then I said about all that took place there. And I said, you know, all the murder and so on. And I said, well, a pile of old shoes does not convince me that the owners of those shoes were killed. Well, he says, it does me. And, well, see the things I start. And so then his wife finally said, and she didn't mind. She was nice about it all. But he was the one, you know, that, and I know what that is. That's that English attitude, because it's about the war. They don't, you know, they've got to make the Germans as bad as can be so that they're not examined for what they did and what they didn't do and so on. But anyway, his wife said, well, we better go over to the bus stop. So they got up and left. And my friend looked at me, but he didn't mind. You know, he would never talk like that. But so when we got, our ride back to Krakow was in the city bus, was just as pleasant and comfortable as in the tour bus. In fact, it was more so for me because I wasn't in that tour bus. And the bus driver had music playing from a radio station, you know, and I like to take, you know, over there, I like to take the local buses and trains, and, you know, because then you're there with the people and you see how it is more, you know. I love to look out the window and see this, you know, the scenery or the city or the, you know, the streets, whatever, passing by, what's there. And it just feels so good. I could travel on these buses for hours. And I was looking out the window and I was jotting down all my experience, you know, what I remembered. And I wrote down some more in my little notebook later that day and that night. And so that was, That was my trip to Auschwitz. Now, I don't have any more callers, but I invite you to call in at 1-800-313-9443 if you'd like to make a comment or ask a question. I do have some more information that I want to tell you about Auschwitz that I received. I think this comes from Jürgen Graf, actually, that it was in responses that he wrote to a Hungarian who was, they had a question, oh, they had kind of a back and forth debate thing going. And I think I took it from there, but I've just found it in my files and I don't have the source of it, but I think that's it. Anyway, it describes some important things about Auschwitz and Himmler, because Himmler, you know, was in charge of all the camps. And it turns out that Himmler was planning and had the plans already for a very large expansion of the hospital system for the inmates at Birkenau. And I'm just going to say from here that on the 23rd of November, 1942, at a time when, according to the Holocaust historians, say that all six extermination camps were performing their task around the clock, Himmler stated in a speech, the Jewish question in Europe has changed radically. This is in late 1942. The Jew has been evacuated from Germany and is now living in the East, where he is working on our roads, railroads, etc. So now he says that these workers were very important to the war effort. And in 1943, in October, that was the following year, 22 days after Himmler's famous Posen speech, Oswald Pohl, chief of the SS Economics Administrative Main Office, that's of the camps, put out a circular letter to all the commanders of all the concentration camps, in which he says, the work capacity of the detainees has become significant, and all measures taken by the commanders, the heads of the food service, and the physicians have to aim for the health and efficiency of the detainees. He says, my first priority is no more than 10% of all detainees should be disabled because of diseases. That is, should be, you know, unable to work. This objective must be achieved by the joint efforts of all concerned. He says it's necessary to ensure, 1, good and proper diet, 2, good and proper clothing, 3, use of all natural health agents, 4, avoidance of all unnecessary efforts not immediately connected with the task in question. Now, that would cover these crazy stories that these survivors tell in their books, that they were given a task of, say, you know, carrying bricks from one side of a yard to another, and all day long, and then the next day they were given the task of carrying those bricks back, just this make work, you know, to wear them down and cause them to end up, you know, dying of exhaustion or something. This is crazy, crazy. These people were capable workers. They wanted them to be capable. They had all this work that needed to be done. As Tom said yesterday, these were labor camps for the most part. This idea of a death camp is pure propaganda. Now, to go on, I've got more here. 3 days before Himmler's Posen speech, Werner Jothen, chief of the Central Construction Office of the Auschwitz concentration camp, okay, this is the builder guy, drafted a preliminary cost estimate for the enlargement of the prisoners' hospital of the camp. The enlarged hospital was to comprise 114 hospital barracks. This was a huge enlargement because they did have a lot of barracks, quite a few, maybe 10 or more, that comprised the hospital in Birkenau, but they were going to enlarge it greatly. And 11 barracks were for patients in need of care, and 12 barracks were for critically ill patients. And they had a lot of patients that barracks that had to be used for tests and for, you know, just emergency or for, you know, the work that they did, because they're always taking stool samples and this kind of sample and that. But, you know, they needed to do all that work too. So they had probably barracks used for that, where just the doctors and the scientists were working in. So the combined cost of these 137 barracks was estimated at, well, okay, so these 11 barracks and 12 barracks were in addition to the 114 barracks. This is incredible. This was a huge project. 137 barracks, the cost was estimated at over 5 million Reichsmarks, which would be, he says, about 50 million euros currently. And, you know, euros are about $75 million, something like that. So this was a lot of money that they were going to put for these sick detainees to try to make them well and to keep them working. Now, why? How can you say that they wanted to? They were exterminating them by the millions. Just isn't common sense at all. No, when you really know what was going on. Okay, we'll be right back to finish the program in a few minutes, ladies and gentlemen.
Do you know the truth about cancer treatments? Do you realize that with all presently accepted methods, you are not correctly attacking the cancer and you are mostly fighting to survive the treatment? Do you realize that mutilating surgery, burning and poisoning of your entire system are totally unnecessary? But now it's cancer's turn to die with LaserMed Incorporated's patented methodology. Without cutting, bleeding, drugs, or damaging radiation, we can destroy skin cancer and breast tumors of any size without adverse side effects at our physician's office. Laser technology at its best. For more information, visit www.lasemedinc.com on the web. That's www.lasemedinc.com.
Call now, 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528.
Introducing IXL Anti-Friction Metal Conditioner. IXL works at the molecular level to reduce friction by penetrating into and bonding onto the microscopic openings of the walls of ferrous base metals. The surfaces become smoother and denser, and this reduces the heat, friction, metal expansion, and wear caused by moving metal surfaces. The benefits are reduced maintenance activities and cost, increased fuel efficiency, and prolonged equipment life. It will not clog filters, pipes, injectors, or supply lines, does not build up or accumulate upon itself as do many other additives. IXL does not contain moly, PTFE, or graphites. Also offers the tremendous benefits of being non-toxic. It's used for a friction reducer and performance enhancer in gas or diesel engines, transmissions, automatic or standard gearboxes, turbos, electric motors, outdrives, lathe, and cutting applications. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, then to our online store, or call us at 800-724-2719. That's 800-724-2719.
Do you flinch when a police car appears in your rearview mirror or you get pulled over? Are you squeamish when an envelope arrives in the mail with the return address of a court, a government agency like the IRS, or some law firm? Would you like to escape government agency harassment? Then visit escapeharassment.com. George Bush allegedly says, "The government constitution is nothing but a doggone piece of paper." Well, that's a contract! A contract is an offer acceptance of that offer, at which point a contract arises by law and the offeror can no longer withdraw the offer. We teach, do not accept! That way there is no contract or agreement for you to go to their court or private club meeting. To escape government agency harassment like the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com. This is a tried and proven experience process, not experimental, with a money-back guarantee that it works and success testimonials from previous students. Remember, escapeharassment.com. That's escapeharassment.com.
All right, we're back, and I want to remind the listeners that the call-in is 1-800-313-9443. But I was telling you about this expansion plan for the hospital at Bear Canal, and a few more things I can tell you about this. What is it? Where did I go here? I lost my place. In December 1943, this was 2 months and 5 days after Himmler's Posen speech. Now, I have to remind you that Himmler's Posen speech has been made out to be the speech in which he is proves that there was an order to exterminate and, exterminate all these Jews in these camps that were death camps. But what I'm saying here is contrary to that. Now, 2 months and 5 days after that speech, another very high SS official, Richard Glucks, who was inspector of the concentration camps, sent a circular letter to the commanders of all the camps, including Auschwitz, in which he stated that Jewish prisoners in urgent need of an operation could be treated in the nearest hospital, but the operation had to be performed by a Jewish doctor. So the nearest hospital means even a hospital in a city or the town nearby, you know, if that was the nearest hospital, if it was urgent. And then goes on, 5 days later, the directive was modified and to say that in case no Jewish doctor was available, a non-Jewish physician could be used as well. So this is how they were treating these people. This is how valuable they were to them, not because they loved them, but they were valuable as people who worked. And then people, you will probably, the Holocausters will say, well, all these other people, they couldn't work. Well, they had very sick people urgently in need of operations. And they were taking care of all these sick people to get them well again. So there you go. Now, one more thing that's about the Hungarian Jews. May 1944, Himmler wrote that the Führer had ordered 200,000 Jews to be sent to the concentration camps where they would be employed at the great construction works of the organization Todt and other projects of importance for the German war effort. And a few days later, this massive deportation of Hungarian Jews commenced. Now, we've been told that they sent 200,000, 300,000, 400,000 Hungarian Jews to Auschwitz, and most of them went immediately to the gas chambers. Crazy. All right, let's see what happened here. Jean-Claude Fresek, who is a well-known, one of the most premier Holocaust historians, wrote that in spring 1945, the Anglo-American troops found Hungarian Jews in 386 concentration camps, labor camps, and working commandos. Some were hundreds in the commando, hundreds of them in the commandos, and tens of thousands of these Hungarian Jews in the big camps. This was in at the time of liberation, spring 1945. So these Hungarian Jews were not exterminated. We go on to say that after the liberation of Auschwitz, four Jewish physicians wrote a report in which they said that over 1,000 Hungarian Jews were being treated in the camp hospital, and among them were 97 boys and 83 girls under the age of 16. So why weren't these Hungarians exterminated? Because none of them were really exterminated. There was no extermination going on. So the moral of my story about my visit to Auschwitz, ladies and gentlemen, is if you go to Auschwitz, don't take a tour. Take my book along. My book is called Auschwitz, The Underground Guided Tour. All right. This is Carolyn Yeager. I'll see you tomorrow. Have a good day.
The next round of the worst financial crisis in 100 years is coming, and the government